You're listening to Decoding the Code, the podcast for developers. Together with fantastic guest speakers, we explore coding myths, discover helpful tips for beginners and experts alike, and get a peek behind the digital curtains. Get ready for your host, Mark Backus.
Hello and welcome everyone to Decoding the Code. Today we are going to talk what is accessibility and why you should care. Today we have Jack Domleo as a guest speaker. He's from Nottingham, United Kingdom. He's a front-end developer. He works a lot with Vue.js and Nuxt. And he likes working with accessibility. Hey Jack, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I love being on these shows, and I like to watch these shows as well. I think they're fantastic.
All right. So just to clear some things up, this accessibility, it's written A11Y. And many, I saw three different ways people pronounce it, like accessibility, which I think is the right way, and then ally, and then A11Y. That's somehow how I pronounce it in my head when I read it. But is the correct pronunciation is, I assume, accessibility, right?
Yeah, it is. So it's quite a weird acronym, ally, as I like to say. It's a strange one because it kind of works backwards. So if you put a screen reader over that acronym, it reads out A11Y. And obviously that kind of contradicts the whole idea, really, doesn't it?
yeah. Okay, so it's like A11 letters and then the Y. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we come to a little bit your expertise, I just want to go very quickly in the basics so the audience knows what this is about. So can you explain what accessibility is in some simple terms? And what does it include, what doesn't?
Yeah, so basically it's everything and nothing on a web page. It can make and break a website, whether you get customers or not, or whether your users find it easy or not. Including accessible features is for every user that uses your website or your web application. It's not just for a small number of users. Now, depending on what kind of features you decide to add in, obviously depends on what kind of groups of people you focus on most. But you know, like a normal person like me and you, having an accessible website is still important because we need to be able to use that website and interact and read the content as well.
Okay, so basically is that everyone can operate a website or an app for that matter. Not important like which abilities they have or which disabilities.
Yeah, so it's quite difficult to write an inaccessible website, but I guess we'll get into that at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's important for people who are able and people who aren't able to do certain things, people who can see quite well are still going to have issues with your website, and people who can't see quite well are going to have issues. So it covers 100% of people.
Okay. So now that we know basically what accessibility is, tell us a little bit about your work with accessibility in your job and maybe even on some fun projects.
Yes.
Yeah, so, how is your work with accessibility?
Yeah, so as a front-end dev for a company that cares about getting lots of customers to their site, it's important for me to try and make our website as accessible as possible with the kind of like time strengths I've got. So whenever we're making new components, I always try and not just make like basic components. I try and do a lot of research into how I can make these accessible. I'll use a screen reader on them and stuff. I will implement Axe. So Axe is a tool to test the accessibility on your website. I've embedded that into our automated testing.
Oh, nice.
So it doesn't catch everything. I put a tweet out a couple of days ago that said automated tests will only capture about 30% of ALI issues. So it's a nice thing to have because it captures obvious stuff. But you know, there's still some other things that we need to do. And if we ever get like concerns about a certain web page, I'll go through that web page. You know, I'll unplug my mouse, for example, make sure that someone can actually use it. If we notice something wrong with the contrast, we'll hand that over to the designers in the company, and we'll kind of like show them proof that, you know, they need to fix some things about it. So I do kind of use it like every day in my job. Outside of work, though, it's actually quite fun. So I sometimes like to make code pen and just like put random components in these code pens I make. And I'll try and make them accessible and purely focus on that. And it's a really good kind of like learning curve, especially for people who are coming across these components for the first time, like seeing all these extra bits that they could add to their components. They find it quite interesting. And I think maybe a point that you were trying to get to was it my open source package I've got? So I've got an open source tool. It's a CSS only tool, and it's called Check Ali.
What does it do?
It's not powerful. All it is it is a style sheet with lots of different selectors on there, and these selectors are made to try and find ALI issues. So for a very basic example, a image without an output, without an alt text, that's not accessible. So in the style sheet, we put image and then not, you know, like alt. So that selector basically says, can you find an image that doesn't have any alt text? And then for the actual styles, we'll put like a red border around that, and it gets flagged up. It's quite a popular learning resource. It's not used as like the go-to tool, but it's a really good thing, a really good one for people to actually learn on. And it's been popular over like the past 6 months or so.
Wow, nice. Later, you send me the link to that, and I will link it in the description for the people that are watching and listening to check out your repo, and maybe they find something interesting there.
Sounds good.
All right. And what are some common accessibility mistakes that that people make when developing websites?
There's quite a lot, and kind of the actual mistake itself depends on what kind of person you are. So I'm a front-end dev, but I'm not very good when it comes to designing an actual website. So all of the ALI makes that I'll make, well, all of the common ones I'll make would be things like contrast. So I'm not very good at picking mm-hmm. the right colors.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not very good at like making components, like have a shadow, for example, and mm-hmm. Sometimes I can make them so that you can't differentiate between certain things. So like those are definitely the common ones I made. And I guess that's quite common with a lot of people as well. Some other mistakes, so some content people, for example, if they are editing a blog, for example, they may add an image, but you know, it might not spring to mind that they need to add alt text to that image.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know, depending on the kind of person, you know, they may miss out that stuff. Other stuff is a bit more complex. You know, not considering the fact that people may use a screen reader. Okay. Now that one's quite advanced. And there's a lot of discussion as to how this should work. So acronyms, they don't get read out that well by a screen reader. Okay. And there's a debate right now as to whether you should force a screen reader to read something else out. Now, the people who are for that say that, you know, that gives them a better experience because it reads the word out as it was meant
yes.
to be. The people who are against it are saying, you shouldn't be giving screen reader users a different experience because you're treating them differently. So it's okay. It's quite an awkward argument. actually, it is a good point that you brought it up. Something that I like to do is search online, just search common mistakes that are made. And I'll go and read all of these articles. And because I know that they are common mistakes, I'll try to not make them in the future. So it's a really good thing, actually, to read if you have the time.
Okay. Yeah, nice. I remember when I made my website, I had troubles with the contrast ratio. And mm-hmm. I spent like more than an entire day on just picking the colors. So at least the Google Lighthouse test would pass and I would get close to 100 accessibility rating, mm-hmm. at least on the Google Lighthouse score. But what else is there that the Lighthouse test doesn't cover? I heard that like, your website can pass 100% Lighthouse score and it's still very not accessible. Do you have some examples for that?
I may not have examples because all of these websites are changing all the time. You know, scores kind of vary each week as people yeah. work on these websites or update them. But if you have a 100% score on Lighthouse, for example, or if you write tests using Axe, these tools. A side fact, the Google Lighthouse actually uses Axe under
oh, nice.
The hood. Yes. Yeah, so if you get 100%, then that is really, really good. Like that is a win-win because that means that Google hasn't managed to spot any obvious errors on your application. The bit where it gets a little bit complex is when you start making all your custom components. So when a native element doesn't exist and you have to make a custom component, Google actually doesn't know what you were intended to make in the first place. So if you were making a combo box, for example, you might put a roll of combo box on there.
Yeah.
But Google doesn't know whether you intended to make a combo box or not. And then it doesn't know how everything links.
Yeah, of course.
So it is something that they are working on. They are putting a lot of encouragement on the devs to write their own tests around this, to make sure that their components are doing what they expected to. So that's where the confusion comes in, is that it's a really smart tool. And if you get 100%, then that's fantastic. But if you do have custom components in your website, which a lot of websites do, then that's where it gets caught out.
Okay, that's good to know. And I remember reading when I looked a little bit into the topic about the different levels of accessibility, A, double A, and triple A. Can you tell us a little bit what are these levels and what are they for?
So these levels, you can think of them as like a school grade. You want to try and get as many A's as you can. Now, depending on your country, depending on what kind of sector your business is in, or if you're just doing a side project, then laws don't apply to you. But for example, if you're living in the UK and you're a public sector company, you've got to meet those AAA standards.
Okay.
That they set. Now, this is actually a new law. It only came in October. And that applies to websites and mobile applications as well. It basically defines the kind of levels. Now, mostly it applies to the color contrast. So if you've got black text on a white background, that's, you know, that's like the most contrast that you actually can have. If you've got gray text on a black background, that'll be harder to read. So then you start going down those A's. At the least, if you're building like a personal project and you want to try and practice these things, you should at least try and aim for the single A standards.
Okay.
They're not very hard to meet. You can do them quite easily. And there's a lot of resources out there to help you choose the right colors if you need to. And there's a lot of resources like tell you how to choose the right colors if you need to. If you are using native elements and you're writing semantic HTML and your website speed is fairly quick, then you're guaranteed to be in one of those bands.
Okay, great. All right, so it's like a ranking on how accessible your site is, and then there are some regulations which type of sites or which type of entities should meet which type of or which level of accessibility.
Yeah, I should also add for example, if you're a public sector company, when your site goes through testing, they don't just put a grade on your entire site. They'll put grades on very specific things. So they'll go through your components and they'll put grades on your components. And then they'll go through the actual colors you've chosen. And they'll put grades on the contrast of those. Then they'll go through the actual content and stuff. They'll go through the website speed, because if you've got a slow website, that's classed as inaccessible, and they'll put grades on that. And then, you know, they'll kind of round them all up to give you an overall grade. So that makes it easier for people making websites, because they know exactly where they need to improve on.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned semantic HTML. Can you elaborate a little bit what is important when you write HTML that is semantic, which translates to accessibility?
Yeah, okay. So if you don't write semantic HTML, I'll start there. If you don't write semantic HTML and you just put divs all over the place, technically you're not breaking any accessibility. But what you have got is you've got a lot of meaningless tags in your HTML that don't tell the user anything. If you use the wrong tags, I'll go there next. So if you've got a anchor tag, and you actually wrap this around a button, for example. This isn't semantic, so according to the HTML standards, you can't wrap a button inside a anchor tag. So this is where you're starting to break this semantic structure. Writing semantic HTML, but that's a different ball game to kind of breaking it. So there's a lot of tags out there that exist that give the user a lot of information for you. So the basic ones are header, main, and a footer. And these basically tell the user where they are in the application, and it helps them navigate through your website easily. Nav is one that tells them that they're using the main nav bar that is available. Using a button rather than a div with a unclick event, that's more semantic because you're using the correct element. And for example, a screen reader, I keep using that as an example, a screen reader will actually to tell the user that this is a button. If you put a div with a unclick, most of them won't tell them that this is a button. But if you put the role of a button on that div, so role is an attribute that can be applied to any tag, and it basically changes the behavior of that element. Ideally, they should only be applied to divs and spans. But if you put the role of a button on to a div with a on click event, then technically this is semantic because you've told this div to be a button. So I think starting with the fact that if you just use divs, that's fine, but you've just got a very bog standard website, it's going to be very difficult to use. If you start breaking semantics,
It's also difficult, for example, to find out for the user where is the content that I'm interested in. So exactly. What's the main and then the article tags? It's I don't know if the on the tab there is some sort of order for or priority for those kind of tags. But at least the user knows, oh yeah, this is main, this is important, this is where my content will be. I think that's one of the things that I know to be important for HTML markup.
Yeah, it's a huge park, but I don't know every tag that exists. I find out new tags every day. And there are new tags being invented for very specific components, so that's also good to see as well.
Yeah, you think you know HTML, and then you see someone on Twitter write about like an element or a tag that you've never seen before, and you're like, "What? I thought I knew this kind of stuff, but apparently I don't."
I see those tweets all the time. I'm like, "Wow, that is." I've learned something new just scrolling through tweets.
Yeah. Yes, and then you go into your you code editor or on your sandbox somewhere, and then you try it out and like, oh man, I did not know this. All right. Would you have some tips that on how you could convince a manager, product leader, or management in general to reserve some budget for accessibility or to take the time for accessibility? Because there's often the problem that management is like, oh no, we have too much to do. We need to make features. But what would some arguments before those decision makers to take accessibility a little bit more serious?
So I think in this topic, this is one of the like more difficult kind of things that the devs have to do. So as a dev, you want to write, you know, the best code that yeah. you can write. As a business, they just want you to write code. If it works, they're happy if it works. So I'm going to split up this answer into two parts. So the first part, if you're a small business, you've got a small team, or if you are a startup, when you're designing your actual applications in the first place, design them so that your components can be made using native elements. Mm-hmm. If you've got to create your own custom components, one, you've got to find time to make those custom components. Two, you've got to test that those custom components work. And three, if you rushed making those components and you didn't make them as accessible as you could do, usually it doesn't take a lot of work to make them accessible, but it does take a lot of research to make them accessible. If you don't do that, then you could potentially be losing customers, whereas using the native element for your type of business would have been the quicker and the easier approach at that time. As you grow, then you can start adding components.
What if my manager asks me like, oh, Mark, you're taking 3 days for this simple component. Why do you need so much time? And I would answer, I want to make it accessible. But they are like, but what does it bring me business-wise? How could I convince him these are some reasons why it's important to make our website or our application accessible?
So sometimes you will meet those people. And I think you've got to come to some kind of level ground. So you, and as a dev, you know, you want to do this thing because it's the right thing to do. Yeah. You want to write the best code. Them, as a business person, they want to get features out as quick as they can because that's what is going to pay their bills. You can't completely understand their point of view, and they can't completely understand your point of view. So I think all that would take would be like a little conversation where you estimate how long you think it'll be. You tell them the risks. So for example, if you finish the component now and you didn't spend that extra time on it, what risks does that bring to the business? And then I would let them decide on that.
Yeah.
If they decide, you know, it's fine, we're happy to take those risks, then I think it's acceptable to leave it. Because I don't want to be the one to tell you to argue with the people.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's not your business. So they take the decisions, and if that's the end decision, then I think as a developer, you have to live with it, but you can always try to convince them, right?
Yeah, you can.
And then, as you said, with the conversation and make them try to understand your point of view.
Yeah, and then make sure you add it to the backlog if you've got time.
Yeah.
Later to come back to these components and add them. And I guess that actually applies to any size business, really, whether you are a small startup or whether you're an Amazon, kind of making sure that it's at least noted down somewhere that certain things need to come back to, and that it's noted down somewhere that people have agreed the risks that they are going to take. I keep saying risks, like, you know, it's a really, really bad thing. By risks, I mean, you know, you could lose some customers. There's no exact figure and like how many customers you could lose. It, you know, completely depends on what your website does. It could be as bad as going to a lawsuit, for example. So anyone visiting your website, they can't use it effectively, and they can prove they can't use it effectively. They actually have the right to take you to court and create a lawsuit out of it, which has happened to a few companies in the past. I won't name them to kind of keep the shame away from them, but if you want to go and research that, just search Ali lawsuits and you'll find lots of things on there.
Well, is this a UK thing, or is it a European Union thing, or is it, do you think it's more general?
So the largest case that's happened was actually an American pizza company, which is known worldwide. I can't remember the exact situation, but there was a partially blind man. He wanted to order a pizza, but he wanted to put specific toppings on this pizza, and the feature to add the specific toppings wasn't accessible. He didn't know he chose, and he took them to court and actually won. And during that court case, it was found out that actually most of this company's website couldn't be used by a lot of customers who needed aids and online. They needed this help when accessing a website.
All right. So everyone who's watching and listening, check your websites for accessibility, because it could cost you a lawsuit, which nobody wants. Mm-hmm. At least get the basics. Right. So in this show, I usually at the end have some myths about the topic that I want to ask the guest speaker. So I have top three myths of about accessibility. I would just present them to you, and you would help me find out if it's a myth or if it's not. So the first one is, web accessibility negatively impacts great web design.
It can. This depends on the person designing the website.
Okay.
I won't put it down to the person's skills, because I don't think it's down to their skills. It comes with experience, I think. So if you just come across accessibility for the first time and you didn't want your company to have a lawsuit, for example, you would try and come up with like the most obvious design that you can do that stands out and looks like it's really simple. As you improve, as you progress over time, you'll start to realize that there's certain things that you may think look ugly that you can then start to improve over that time period. And then when you're designing websites, you can actually design very modern websites. And if you're working with a front-end dev, or if you're a front-end dev working with a designer, if you work as a team, you can actually create some really nice looking websites and make them as accessible as you can. So I know where that myth comes from. It comes from people being too scared, basically, to create nice designs. So they try and make them, they think they're trying to make them accessible. They think it looks ugly, but it is one that can work. If you can do it by yourself, that's great. So I know a lot of people who can do this. There's a freelancer I know, I think you know as well. His name is Dan Spratling.
Oh yeah, Dan Spratling, yes.
Yeah, He's a fantastic dev and he's a fantastic designer as well. And the websites he designs look fantastic. And the code he writes, from what I can see, is very accessible as well. So,
oh, nice.
My hat's off to him. But yeah, no, I think that is a myth. You can create some nice websites.
Okay. Second one, only a small percentage of my users need an accessible website or application.
So again, that myth has like a root. So the so where this myth came from was, you know, oh, not all of my users or customers are blind. Not all of them need a screen reader. So a screen reader tends to be like the most kind of popular example that people go for. So that's where that myth comes from. But actually, all of the users do need accessible help, I guess. So whether that is a third-party tool, like a screen reader, for example, I can see fine. I mean, I know I have on these, but I can see fine. But on my Alexa, I actually have a skill, and this skill recognizes when I'm stuttering to my Alexa because I have a stutter, as you probably worked out. So that's a third-party tool that I've got on my Alexa, and that's not a website. That's, you know, something that I speak to. I would be a small percentage of those users who needs that third-party tool, but actually, everyone stutters. Everyone has an accent. For example, talking to Alexa, for example, Alexa needs to be able to understand everybody, not just the, you know, bog standard. She's speaking to me now. So that's an example. I've turned you off. I'm going to take the plug out. So that's an example. That's not actually a website, but it's where they need to encounter everybody at the same time. If you made a website and it was yellow with lime green text, would you be able to read that? And the answer would be no. And, you know, do you need a screen? Do you normally use a screen reader? You know, they'd say no, but to read this lime green text, they would probably need a screen reader to help them because it would be quite difficult. So I think I mentioned this at the start, it all depends on who the person is, what kind of product you've got, what kind of website, etc. But that is a myth. 100% of people need those features enabled or available to them, I should say.
Yeah. All right. Now the last one. It will take too much time, effort, and or money to make a website accessible.
There's those memes online in there where, like, if you make, it's like, if you want to make a cheap app, it will take you a long time and a lot of effort. If you want to make a quick app, then it'll be expensive to do, etc. And it's like those charts kind of keep moving around. I'd say to do the research. So if you're making your own custom component, for example, most of the work goes into the actual research around what you actually need to do. The person doing that research, obviously the company pays them. So, you know, they pay them that time So you know, I get paid 7.5 hours a day. If I spend 2 hours during that day researching something, then I get paid for it. And that is a cost that the company has. It's all dependent on, you know, the size of your company and what risks that company is willing to take, like we spoke about earlier. I don't know whether to call that one a myth. I think there's some truth in it. It does require some extra time, some extra effort. If you have people in your company who already know how to do this stuff, then obviously that makes it better, but they will always come across something that they don't know and they've got to still spend that time on. So yeah, I'm reluctant to call that one a myth. There's a bit of truth in it.
Interesting. All right. That's the things I wanted to ask you. Do you maybe have something that you want to tell the audience about accessibility, or in general, some message you want to give the audience?
Sort of. When you're researching about Ali and you're looking at all these articles online, be sure to check the resource that you're actually looking at. There's a lot of outdated resources on there which actually don't apply anymore. There's a lot of resources that I found. It's harsh to say, but they're just plain wrong. And you know, you can tell that this person hasn't done any research into what they are saying. So make sure that when you find a resource, that you can actually find multiple resources that back up, you know, the argument that the other ones are trying to make. So that's something I do. I have come across a lot of resources in the past. I've tried to implement what they've told me, and I've actually gone, that's not right at all. So I would definitely do that. One other thing is, don't fall into the trap of being too obsessive. I once fell into that trap of being too obsessive about it, and like that third myth, you know, it can cost a lot of time to be very obsessive about it. Definitely be passionate, but don't be obsessive.
Okay. Nice. Those are some nice words to end this episode. Thank you very much, Jack, for coming on the show and for taking time out of your schedule and for answering all the questions.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Okay. Bye-bye, Jack. Bye-bye, everyone.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Decoding the Code. A new episode will be available every week, so don't forget to tune in next Monday. For past episodes, check out the website decoding.show.